Hi, everybody. This is Isaac from the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. You are listening to the free edition. If you want the bonus content, of course, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher gets you there. On today's topics, we'll be covering the alien invasion of pop culture. Aliens, you think you know them, you think you love them, but boy, is there more to the truth than you know. Today we'll get into a variety of other topics as well. Janelle Monáe, Saturday Night Live's predictive programming, a little Harry Potter action, Rosemary's Baby, James Cameron, Ancient Aliens, and so on. Now, the free version, you'll get most of that content. However, if you support me on Patreon, you can get extra bonus content. Talk a little bit more about Tom DeLonge and this, alien disclosure agenda he's got. We go into Bigelow. I do a fantastic David Childress impression. Talk about Harry Reid a little bit, Project Sign, Close Encounters, Devil's Tower, J. Allen Hynek, Hillary Clinton, and the Rockefeller Initiative to push UFO disclosure. I want to thank you for listening. Here's the show. Hi, everybody. This is Isaac. You're listening to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. Now, look, I've got a confession I have to make to you. And, I'm not proud of it. I actually didn't think I would be doing this in such a public manner. But I've crossed a bridge in my life. And I think that I shouldn't really kind of keep this secret in anymore. I love Jersey Shore. Yes, that's right. Maybe one of the dumbest shows ever to hit television. But it's my favorite. It stole my heart again. I didn't think they could do it. They instituted their show. And the first episode I recorded thinking, there's no way this is going to live up to the original Emmy Award-winning seasons of Jersey Shore on MTV. But I'll be damned if they didn't. I'll be damned if they didn't knock it out of the park again. Yesterday was Jersey Thursday. Jersey Thursday. And man, that show's good. I don't know if you're a fan of Jersey Shore, but I'm a big fan. And I relate because I grew up back there, so like I know what that environment and sort of what the people are like sometimes. And I don't know, man, they're funny. They made me laugh. I like those guys. I actually went to the Jersey Shore house. They were between seasons once, and I was up at Asbury Park. And you can walk right up to the house. You can walk up the stairs. Anyways, you're not here to listen to Jersey Shore comments. I just wanted to break the ice on that. In case you were wondering where I stood on Jersey Shore. Okay, so I'm actually recording this on May 4th. I'm not going to say May the 4th be with you. If you're on my Twitter feed, you saw my disdain for that comment, that hashtag, whatever we want to call this stuff now. I wish they would just drop it. It's not funny anymore. Of course, it could be just because I dislike the Star Wars franchise because I wrote that book about it and watched every film. And I decided that I didn't like the culture that Star Wars created. No offense to my Star Wars stans out there. I know one in particular probably listening right now and probably getting real upset. But, I don't know, man. I feel like the Star Wars series has an agenda. And, how long before May the 4th is a holiday, right? Or worship of sci-fi. But I'm going to get into that. Whole idea of science fiction later in the show. I've got a lot on here. Lots of controversy in my recent dislike for A Quiet Place. Hey, I just didn't think it was that good. I thought it was overhyped. They sold it as a horror movie, but it was not. It was more of a sci-fi, quasi-love story. I'd be willing to try it again, though. I'd be willing to try it again with open eyes, new eyes. I just, the first go through, I was like, this is trash. This is not what I was sold. In fact, my idea of the worst date on the planet would be going to In-N-Out Burgers for food, then A Quiet Place, and then having to go to a country bar and be the designated driver. That's my hell. That's what I would have to relive over and over. The first ring of hell there. YGuy3 left a great review on iTunes for the show. Calls me a rare gem with a sexy voice. Well, okay. All right. You know, I'd like to be more of a narcissist, so of course I will read those comments and compliments. Thank you. Seriously, though, thank you. I do appreciate the good review on there. Much appreciated. No, I previously talked about cutting down my intros and my sort of housekeeping section, but I don't know. Fuck it. I like this. I like this part. This is a part where you and I can connect on a personal level, and if you don't like it, you can skip forward a little bit, right? I do have a lot to talk about today, though. I've got a lot going on here, and you'll probably notice I just released an episode with the true freethinker Ken Ami, which is a great show, actually. I do want you to listen to that one, too, because we go into more of an overall sort of breadth argument of everything going on in the world and why it's happening. But you'll notice the frequency of shows I put out a month kind of varies. I shoot for 3. Every once in a grand while, I only hit 2. And then oftentimes, I'll hit 4. And it's because I don't do this and approach this as a job necessarily. I have a day job that I go to, which I'm sure you've heard me talk about in the past. And lately, it's been, in particular, it's been grinding me down to a stump. But hey, you know what? They keep the lights on in the house. They keep the electricity flowing. But I also started that Patreon page, as you're aware of, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher, which many of you have signed up for, and I appreciate that more than I could even tell you, because that's what's given me hope that I can keep this Illuminati Watcher research project going. Because, you know, the day job is necessary to pay the bills, because YouTube won't. I've talked about that on a recent episode. And then also, I know I talked about my actual monthly income, and but I posted the screenshot of that just to prove what I was saying on my Twitter feed. So if you listened to that episode where I was talking about the agenda, where some news outfit was talking to these conspiracy YouTubers, and they're trying to say, oh, these conspiracy people are making 6 to 7 to 8 grand a month on YouTube videos, because they want disgust. They want people to be upset by the conspiracy community, and they want to shut us down. They want to remove the First Amendment rights of our kind of speech. They want to call it hate speech eventually. You'll see that'll happen. They're going to censor us. So they're trying to lay down the argument about, you know, they're going to say, oh, you know, Donald Trump, look how disgusting he is, and look at all the people that support him. It's these alt-right conspiracy folks. And if you're new to the show, that is not me. I'm not an alt-right guy by far. I don't like Donald Trump as a president. I think he's very entertaining. In fact, if he had a TV, I used to watch, what's that show he was on? The Apprentice. I watched The Apprentice. I think he's a funny dude. But, and like I've talked about in the past, my dad actually hung out with Donald Trump once. Yeah, that's right. A tour de Trump in Atlantic City. AC, we call it back there. He saw him out there, said hi to him, and then Donald Trump was hanging out with him. Invited him onto his little yacht or whatever. But, anyways, I'm getting way off track here. I was talking about the danger, talking about the, so the frequency of shows, right? So, this month, May, I might have like 5. And again, this would be a rare occasion, but I'm just letting you know, because I don't know if you are curious about that element and you're expecting one a week or so on, but like, it really depends on a huge amount of factors. If I have a guest, I have to find the schedule that works for both of us. Oftentimes I have to take time off work, which I don't mind. Trust me. Any good excuse to get away from work is good enough for me. But anyways, and you've probably noticed, you probably had to listen to a O'Reilly's car parts commercial or something at the beginning of the show if you're not a Patreon subscriber. And that is because I need to punish you. I need to punish you with commercials. And I apologize from the bottom of my heart, but this is what it's the new model. It's the new business model. And like anybody in showbiz will tell you, it's more business than it is show. So yeah, I've got these commercials loaded. I'm sorry. I hate it. I hate it as much as you do. But you know what? It helps me pay these bills. It helps make things happen. If you don't like them, you can support me on the Patreon page. And if you can't afford the Patreon thing, hey, I get it, man. But you got to suffer through the commercials. I'm sorry. I'll try not to go overkill on it. And by the way, I'm not in control of necessarily what they play. So it is what it is. Because I signed up to a new network and they do the commercials and blah, 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 blah. Anyways. Okay. I'm at 9 minutes. Oh, boy. Okay. Here we go. Let's see. I also posted an image on my Twitter feed about the last episode, or yeah, last podcast on the left. Have you heard of that show? It's a pretty good show. Talk a lot about horror movies. Henry Zebrowski was wearing a Baphomet shirt on one of his little videos he had for his Twitter feed. I was just kind of perusing through his stuff, and I noticed the Baphomet shirt. It's the same one that Little Peep wears. Little Peep is that rapper that mysteriously died at, I don't know, I think 28, just recently. I got a video on my YouTube feed about it. Anyways, I posted it, said he was in the Illuminati, and he liked it. Seems, at least he's got a good sense of humor. So, also, I know on my, I gave, on my YouTube channel, I gave a kind of like an 8 minute preamble about Kanye West and all the statements he's been making lately. He was on TMZ and he had this sort of another rant. He had a rant like 5-6 years ago or something like that. And I did an analysis back then saying, look, there's more to what he's saying than what the mainstream media is serving up. Because, you know, they're doing sound bites and headlines. And I gave a little preamble on my YouTube channel and I implied that that would be my next podcast out, but it's not. And the reason why is because there is a lot out there going on. I listened to his whole TMZ live feed. That was like 40 minutes. Then I listened to his whole Charlemagne interview. That was like another hour and a half. I listened to another hour and a half podcast from the guy who supposedly was combative to Kanye at TMZ. Or I don't know if combative is the right word. He's the one that had a response for Kanye when Kanye was talking about how slavery was a choice. I listened to his podcast, which is very suspect. This guy, I can't find his name right now, but anyways, the guy, the TMZ guy, we'll call him, he had a podcast that started in February 18. He had like 7 episodes out, and the, you know, 8th episode or whatever released on April 30th. That's the one where he's talking about Kanye. But Kanye didn't go on TMZ till May 1st. Okay. Now, what very well could have happened is TMZ guy was following Kanye's tweets, right? That's kind of how it sounds. He was just following Kanye. He was a fan, and he was kind of upset by what Kanye was saying and doing, because Kanye was taking the pictures with the MAGA hat, you know, pro-Donald Trump hat. So I'm thinking that that's all this is. But the coincidence is very, very suspect. So the next day, Kanye goes on TMZ, and just so happens that this is the same guy that gets in an argument with Kanye. I don't know, man. Something stinks about this, but maybe not. Maybe I'm, you know, that's my conspiracy mind turning too many gears. But I'm gonna go deeper in on this and give you guys some kind of project on this. I'm not sure how. But Kanye does talk about celebrity worship and the problems with that. And that's what I've been saying for years. So, like, some of what Kanye says resonates with me. Some of it does not. He obviously doesn't know politics. I mean, that's clear from listening to all these interviews with him. He just knows controversy and showbiz. I mean, he's married to the freaking Kardashians, right? They're famous because of a chick was in a porn tape. Now, I think it's also, and I know what it's like to be on the other side of this, because I've been arguing that people worship celebrities unjustifiably for years. I mean, go and say anything bad about Beyonce, Rihanna, Mariah Carey, and see how long it takes before someone attacks you. Like, they think that these are like their gods, their best friends. Even the rap group Swollen members. I know I'm getting like deep in the rap woods here, but like that's a group of guys, and a lot of them have like lots of face tattoos. I mean, this was, I don't know, this is like 7 years ago when I first started my website. I did an article. I did a little kind of like, I don't know, symbolism analysis in one of their videos because I saw a bunch of symbols or whatever, and I made a comment about, you know, these guys are having face tattoos and how, you know, they're influencing other people to get face tattoos. And this is back before Lil Pump and all these new SoundCloud rappers were coming out with all the face tattoos. They were on the leading edge of this kind of stuff, Swollen members. I think they're white dudes even, too. Not that that matters, but... yeah, and I said something about, like, how that's bad. And look, I've got tattoos. I love tattoos. If I didn't have a job I had to go to, I'd probably have face tattoo myself. Like, I think they're cool. But, some people attacked me because they were a bunch of Swollen member stands, and they were saying, oh, that's so bigoted of you to talk bad about face tattoos, but they didn't get the bigger picture. And that's why I think I resonate with Kanye, because he's saying stuff and people want to pick the wrong argument out of what he's saying. And I'm not saying, oh, these guys have face tattoos, these are bad guys. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, if you want to be successful in this hamster wheel that we've created of reality, maybe be a little careful about that, because, you know, I work in an office environment with lots of supposed professionals, and none of them have face tattoos, right? And in fact, I heard on the All Out show someone called Rude Jude once and talked about this, and he basically was kind of, he had some good advice. He basically said, you know, you need to look at what your bosses look like. Do they have face tattoos? And I guess another question would be, are you trying to eventually move up the ladder to be your boss someday? And if you are, then you need to look and fit the mold. I don't think that's right. I'm not saying we should all just conform by any means. I'm just saying we are not a progressive enough society that you can go get a face tattoo and someone is going to be able to look past that and not think you're a gang member or a drug dealer or something. I don't think it's right. I don't think that when I see people with that. I might think they're a tattoo artist or something. But I'm just saying, the point is... not to belabor the point. The point is Kanye is saying a lot of truths in there. I don't agree with what he said about the slavery was a choice thing. But like his point was, we need to be in control of what we want and not allow society to shape it. And I think that people like being told what to do. They like being told someone is in control. That's why... you know, the 9/11 thing happened with the planes, and we supposedly, you know, begged for the TSA to pat our balls down every time we go to the airport. You know, it's all, and all this crazy stuff, we gave up all of our privacy, all in the name of, oh my God, they're going to stop the planes from doing that again. Are they though? They've been reading every single person's email, tweet, and so on for, you know, 15, 16, 17 years now. And they still don't stop every terrorist attack? Anyways, that was a 17-minute intro. Oops. But, you know, that they're all relevant pieces of housekeeping, okay? All right, first topic, Janelle Monáe. She released what she called her emotion picture for her album Dirty Computer. And there was so much Illuminati symbolism, I had to go through and do an analysis and formal video on YouTube. Now, if you look at her work, which I wasn't real familiar with, she based her first couple albums on Metropolis. Okay. That was the 1927 film by Fritz Lang, which I did a full analysis on that because it's all about transhumanism. And it talks about the Tower of Babel. It is about an elite power structure. And they even have inverted pentagrams suggesting like a magical incarnation of this new entity. This new entity is called False Maria on the movie. And has all these ideas of, you know, artificial intelligence and so on. And Janelle Monáe, on her first couple albums, was emulating this. And she was basing the plot of this, the album's lyrics, upon this sort of idea. Now, I found this very curious, because there have been many female artists that have been emulating the False Maria archetype. This, you know, quite literally, they call her the Whore of Babylon in the movie. We've seen Lady Gaga dressed up like this, Beyonce, and Whitney Houston. These are all the divas, the goddesses. Divas, as in the Indian word for Devayana, meaning the goddess archetype. Again, this is going back to what I was talking about 10 minutes ago. We are supposed to be worshiping these celebrities because the Illuminati or whoever we want to call these people, they know that they can influence us through these channels, these mediums, these puppets. Now, Monáe also had an interesting inspiration for her albums, and it was a quote from Metropolis. It says, "Without the heart, there can be no understanding between the hand and the mind." And that was interesting because Madonna also emulated the Metropolis films, and you can see this in her video Express Yourself, and she actually has that quote that starts out the video. Now, if you look a little deeper into Monáe's background, you find that she was from Kansas City. And she was big into The Wizard of Oz, of course, and Metropolis. Now, I see Wizard of Oz, and automatically that triggers me because there are so many theories about the Illuminati and MKUltra mind control and traumatic sort of fracturing of the minds that happen with children, especially based upon The Wizard of Oz. Now, this is curious because there's an article written about Monáe by The Star, and they call her a star child, which indicates that she is the occult Aleister Crowleyan magical offspring, which is something we'll revisit here. But now, her most recent work, she's called it an homage to women and the spectrum of sexual identities. And another little piece of background you have to know is that she was working with Prince before he died. And her work sounds just like it. So it's actually like pretty good music. But, you know, Prince was big into this sort of like genderless sexual merging of things. The jury's out in my mind as to whether Prince was, you know, knowledgeable about Illuminati or occult concepts or what. But his symbol that he replaced his name with was a fusion of genders, which was in his Paisley Park. And if you saw my video, that TMZ had just released the video footage of his death scene. He died in front of the elevator on top of the Star of Ishtar symbol. It's pretty wild, especially when you consider the elevator is what he called the devil. L.A. Reid confirmed this. He said when he talks about in his song, the elevator, you know, bringing us down, he's talking about the devil. Then M. Night Shyamalan's movie, The Devil, is about people stuck in an elevator. What is this? What's the deal with the elevator? I think I actually mispronounced the name. I think it's M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong. So Monáe's most recent work, it's an idea of exploring sexual identities. She plays this android in a world where they get rid of all emotions, very 1984. And when we talk about the gender fusion, we're talking about reconciling the opposites. This is what we see with the Baphomet symbol on the Baphomet's arms. It says solve and coagula. It's talking about separating and joining. it's a magical concept, creating something out of nothing. So in the video, if you watch it to the astute viewer, you will see that Monet is dressed up and emulating and recreating a scene where she is the alchemist from the Holy Mountain. This is a film by Alejandro Jodorowsky. If you've never seen it, wow, do you have to see this movie? It is so weird. It is it's so full of occult symbolism. And one of the symbols is this, it's this guy who's actually played by Jodorowsky. He is the alchemist, and he's kind of a guru that, you know, transforms a bunch of people through destruction of the ego and so on. But there is a sort of iconic scene from that was also emulated by Marilyn Manson in a video called Born Villain that was directed by Shia LaBeouf. Now, in Dirty Computer, we also see Monet dressed in black and white and dressed up as a man at the same time. Again, the black and white is the duality concept. Now, there seems to be an interest in the Illuminati world of this new type of entity. It's a genderless, sexless entity. I don't think that they are necessarily concerned with the rights of the gay community as much as they are about bringing in this new entity in the Star Child, which is what she was called in that article previously. And then she even identified herself as a pansexual in Rolling Stone. And that is basically the idea that you're attracted to just people in general, no matter what their sexual or gender identity is. Which, you know, sounds nice, right? I'm not opposed to love. I'm just saying that they are promoting this lack of diversity is what they're promoting. I mean, it's in a good name. It's in the name of inclusion. But you also have to wonder where it ends. Like, you know, we used to celebrate diversity. Like, I enjoy going to new cultures. But, like, if everybody's the same, like, that's going to be a pretty boring world. They're going to sell it as it's a safe world. Just like the 9/11 idea theory. They sell us this idea of safety in exchange for our privacy. Now, Deadpool, he's also another character that's supposed pansexual. Lots of people aren't aware of that, and I think in the Deadpool 2 movie, they're going to go further into that. You know, Monet, in her video, she is wearing black and white half the time, so I mean, it's obvious this is an important concept. This idea of birthing the Star Child. She also does a bit of the, you know, the peace sign. She does a lot, actually. It's this idea where she's calling upon this beast from the abyss called Nodens or Typhon. Again, we see this in Metropolis. You'll have to see my analysis for more on that. And then she goes through the archetype of the mother goddess. She opens up her womb, and someone new comes out of this womb. And there's even one of the dancers is wearing some panties that say the Great Cosmic Mother. Again, they're calling upon the archetype of the mother goddess, Semiramis or Ishtar, whatever you want to call it. And to be more on the nose with it, she's got a tattoo. It's actually a henna tattoo on her arm of what appears to be Christ on the cross. But upon closer examination, it's a female with breasts on the cross with a television cube on her head. Now, what does that mean with the cube on her head? Well, it could be a symbol for Saturn, of course. Even the cross, some claim, is a symbol for Saturn. It's an unfolded cube. Now, the television, it could be a commentary about entertainment. Obviously, I don't know. Now, a very curious image she shows up with is she's wearing a black robe with a black triangle hat, akin to Aleister Crowley's triangle hat you see him wearing. And then she's got a white circle around it. This is the symbol for magic with the triangle and the circle. We also see the dove flying across the screen. This is, again, a symbol of Columbia, Colomb, the dove, the female goddess. And just to reiterate the point on the credits, you'll see that scene in particular was called the Black Girl Magic Dance. And then they have the dancers on the credits. You know, finally, to wrap it up, Monet, she is the new Jesus Christ, because we see her in the Last Supper scene at the position of the table at the center. Again, we have the tattoo. There's a lot of artists that are trying to emulate themselves as gods. And also, the actress Tessa Thompson is in here. She was in Westworld. Again, Westworld is a whole nother beast. That's a, you know, I've got a whole article and video on that, but like, it's a whole theme of Gnosticism and Luciferian awakening. And to reiterate the point, on the Monet video, you see apples and a fly crawling across them. Again, these are all symbolic themes of, you know, Adam and Eve in the garden, the serpent, temptation, Lucifer opening up the eyes, making them become like gods. Now, at the end of the video, we find out that these people that are, let me back up because you haven't seen it. They're trying to kind of wipe the memories of people because they want them to become, you know, more neutral or whatever. And the people that are doing the work are called torches. They're helping people acclimate to their new environment. Again, the torch is the symbol for Lucifer or the Illuminati, or, you know, the Statue of Liberty, the goddess. She's the goddess of the new Atlantis in America. And the last track on Dirty Computer is a song called Americans. And they're talking about fallen angels in the song. Or she is, you know. And at the video, you see the torches carrying the man out into the light. From the darkness to the light. That's actually the verbiage they use in the video. Now, one more quick thing that you see is that Monet talks about the other, the antinomian concepts. She says that the android represents the other. And I'll go into that with Kanye on the next, you know, when I do my Kanye analysis. But like, there's this idea of embracing the adversary. The adversary is Set or the other. And that comes from a whole variety of ideas. Like Set was the king of, you know, the outer regions of Egypt, and, you know, he was the king of the desert and the other. But I'm going to go further into that. And then at the end, you'll see she is also in a bathtub inside of an all-seeing eye, which is very alarming when we consider the sacrifices of the goddess, such as, you know, Whitney Houston passing away in the bathtub, and her daughter, of course, Bobby Christina. So there's a lot to be alarmed with her video, because it shows us a pretty severe trend progression, and it's not much different than Rihanna's anti videos, which I've, again, you got to check out that analysis and videos, because it's pretty intense. And same with Monet. There's more that I didn't talk about, but time is limited. Did you see the Saturday Night Live featuring Cardi B? It was interesting because not so much that Cardi B was performing. I mean, she was wearing the black and white stuff, and she's fine, whatever. But on the, you know, they do the news skit where they kind of make fun of the news, and they talked about how they make a joke about how, about a plane going down with one engine, about how they're still going to go to Hawaii on it. It doesn't really matter about the joke, but the point is that happened, and then about a week later, the exact thing happened in reality, where the plane had to make an emergency landing in Hawaii. I'm going to actually try to work something up about that, like a video on YouTube, so you can see what I'm talking about, because I'm sure this is translating super awesome. But the idea is that we saw a little bit of predictive programming on SNL, okay? And predictive programming is very important in the overall scheme of things, because that is supporting the idea that there is an agenda, there is a timeline that they want us to go down. Gigi Hadid, she is a famous model. She was interviewed by Elle magazine. They gave her a very mainstream question, and then they promptly diverted her onto another mainstream question. And what they said, what they asked her, they said, "What period in history would you want to go back in time and visit?" And she said, "I mean, there are so many things I would have loved to experience, including the building of the pyramids. I would love to go back and know if it was aliens or what happened there, so I could, like, tell everyone I love conspiracy theory." And then and the journalists that they have there decided to pivot on that question. And they were, are you a 5 minutes early or 5 minutes late kind of person? You know, these journalists, I love it. I love that they are scared to ask questions. I mean, here she was talking about what could have been the most interesting, you know, conversation that she'd ever had in her life with an interview, and they just shut it down immediately. Again, supporting the idea that there will be a suspension of First Amendment rights for conspiracy theorists in due time. No, I think this is also very curious because if you think about the Pizzagate stuff, and I don't want to talk about Pizzagate too loud, because like there's just too many questions about it. Like, I'm not a wholehearted like believer in it, but based upon a lot of ideas of what goes on behind the scenes and the disturbing ideas of ritual and sacrifice of energy, I gotta say, it's got some traction in my mind. But then when I read these weird emails about bringing 30,000 hot dogs to Hawaii and, you know, putting things in the hot tub or whatever, the weird stuff that Podesta and them were emailing to each other, why aren't the journalists asking those questions? I mean, the Pizzagate thing was pretty big in the news even. They were trying to shut that whole thing down. They were just saying, oh, it's some wacky conspiracy. Okay, well then explain what they're talking about. Just ask the question. Just ask them why 30,000 hot dogs. What does that mean? But they won't. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, man. Anyways, Paul O'Grady. Are you familiar with who this celebrity is? He's apparently big in the UK. Does a bunch of stuff: comedy, acting, so on. He believes we're being watched by aliens. So there's, you know, another celebrity talking about the aliens. They're trying to implant this idea of belief in aliens. Everybody's doing it. Celebs are just like us. They believe in aliens. Kim Wilde, I talked about her on a recent podcast. She was that 80s singer for Kids in America. She's back in action talking about aliens. She said, maybe they even are using me to put out a pop record with them on it. Because she did, in fact, release a record talking about aliens. Now she believes she's the channel for aliens. I'm going to revisit this alien topic here real soon, so I don't want to go too deep into it. I watched the film Mother, or maybe I should say Mother! It's got an exclamation point at the end. It's a Darren Aronofsky film. If you've never seen Aronofsky's work, it's always like a real mind screw, okay? And if you haven't seen this one, I'm gonna try, let me look through my notes here and make sure I'm not gonna give anything away. Yeah, so I'll try not to spoil the plot much. I guess if you're a big fan, you would have seen it by now. So anyways, you'll notice that Jennifer Lawrence's character, she says, I love the work. And when she's talking about the work, she's talking about the great work of Freemasonry. And there's more to support this. I'm going to actually put something more polished together on this subject, because it's a very weird movie, of course, because Aronofsky's got lots of weird movies like The Fountain, Pi, which is actually should be pronounced P, not to be an uber geek about it. But then he did Requiem for a Dream, Black Swan, lots of trippy stuff. So, and then Jennifer Lawrence also, they talk about, say, why not build a new house? And in alchemy, that is partially the great work, is rebuilding oneself. And you hear language about how she's creating something new when she's talking about like children, making children. And then she says she has to start working on the apocalypse. And, oh, I knew I said I wasn't going to do any plot spoilers. Skip ahead about 30 seconds. But she, towards the end, you'll see that there's like a Rosemary's Baby theme going on. And a bunch of weirdos come over. And then she gets pregnant way too quickly. And again, it's the star child idea. And I'll go deeper into it Sorry, that was more of a tease than it was anything. I wanted to give you more substance there, but I'm going to write something formal up on that. So stay tuned or hit me up on the email newsletter at IlluminatiWatcher.com. You can go to the Start Here tab. There's a newsletter there where I keep you updated on all my latest efforts. My homie was reading Harry Potter, and he found there is a character on there named Cassandra Vablatsky. I mean, come on. That's Helena Blavatsky, for sure. Because she, like Helena, is also an occult author. And to transpose the letters V and B, I mean, come on. Vablatsky and Blavatsky couldn't be any more obvious. And in the past, I've talked about how the author, J.K. Rowling, is that her name? Let me look that up. Yeah, J.K. Rowling. She talked about how the symbol of the Deathly Hallows, the circle with the triangle and the wand up the center there, that is based upon the Freemason compass and square. Now, I don't like to put myself in league with all the sort of ate up right wing, you know, Bible thumpers that say, you know, this is occult trash. But it kind of is, right? I mean, she is quite obviously promoting magic and magic in the real sense of it. And when you find out that her inspirations are all of the occult nature, maybe this is trying to get kids to march down that path. And usually I'm the first one to sort of like shout down those ideas, but I don't know. Maybe they're right on this one. I've never read the books. I've never seen the movies. I don't really know. Like I said, I don't read kids' books. No, I have a hard time with fiction, though, honestly. It's harder for me to read fiction than it used to be. I don't know what's up with that, but... Rosemary's Baby. You've seen the still shots of Mia Farrow's character and the princess Kate Middleton. Because Kate Middleton recently gave birth to a child. And I don't know the royal family bullshit, whatever. But it's very interesting because the dress is identical as the one worn by Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby, which is about this baby born as the son of the devil. Very curious. Very curious they would have that same symbolism. And then extra curious that people actually caught that. Good job, people. Nexium, that is something, again, I'm going to work on a more polished study of this. That's going to be in an upcoming episode. But it's this weird sort of sex cult where there was human trafficking going on. And an actress from Smallville was allegedly funneling other female actresses into this sort of guru guy that would, you know, sexually mess with their heads and stuff. What's curious to me, what actually stoked my interest in this the most was that he would brand, or someone would brand his victims with his initials, but he said that it was supposed to be a magic symbol. So what was that magic symbol? Well, I'm trying to find out. I was trying to secure a guest who knows a lot about this Nexium group. So I'm going to give this person another week or two, and then I'm going to just go into it myself. But there's 1,500 migrant children missing, as per the New York Times. And even in the article on New York Times, they allude to the idea of human trafficking. And that's where these kids went, supposedly. Now, could this be connected? I don't think so, but... this will make more sense here in a bit. I still got a couple more things I want to go through. Because in the Nexium group, they were learning neuro-language programming. It's this idea of like talking to people with certain symbols and moving your hands a certain way or whatever. As a way of sort of hypnotism or mind control. And speaking of NLP, Samsung has this thing called Unspoil Me, where they think they can hypnotize you to forget scenes from movies that you liked and so on. And it's this whole thing where they've this master hypnosis guy who supposedly help them build this program where you watch it for 23 minutes and it wipes your memory of just the episode. Like, no worries, nothing, what could possibly happen here? But I also found it curious that it's 23 minutes long. 23 is the number of Discordianism. The 2 plus 3 is the law of fives. Everything happens in fives. And that goes into a whole host of territories. You know, Jim Carrey, he did that film, The Number 23. And he wanted $23 million to do that. And he was aware of the symbolism and the sort of importance of that number in terms of the occult. And Diego had reached out to me. He wants to see an analysis on Jim Carrey. I'm going to work that up a little bit because Jim Carrey's been acting kind of nutty lately, right? Okay, a couple more things I want to get through. James Cameron, he is doing the story of science fiction on the AMC. I watched the first episode. It was okay. There's a bunch of, it's interesting, but it's okay in terms of like, what information did I glean out of that is relevant to the conversation we're having right now. It's basically a show with a bunch of stars and actors and actresses and directors and so on. Will Smith, Steven Spielberg, James Cameron, even Sean Lennon is on there. Christopher Nolan, even Robert Patrick from Terminator 2. He was the metal Terminator guy who I actually saw in Las Vegas once, not to brag, but I saw him playing at a card table. I didn't stop him or nothing. I just left him be. But it was actually the same day I saw the rapper Tyga. If you know who that is, I don't know. That's, again, I'm probably going too deep down the rap rabbit hole. He's the Rack City guy. You probably heard that song. But anyways, I walked past him. And he was kind of a short dude. And the only reason I thought twice was like, it was this dude with a backpack on and he had like tattoos, you know? So I automatically thought he was a drug dealer, you know? I'm just kidding. I know I just talked about that. But I saw him, but he was with this chick that was like, looked pretty good, you know? And so I thought, who's this guy? And then this was 10 years ago or something. This is before he made that album with, Nicki Minaj and Drake had the Bedrock song on it. I knew who he was, but it was just because I was really into like mixtapes back then. And so I seen the girl, and then I gave a second look to him, and I was like, oh, that's the rapper Tyga. Now, I wish I would have stopped him. I didn't know he was going to get so famous. But unless you don't know who I'm talking about, then he's not that famous, right? Anyway, so story science fiction on AMC. They go into some interesting talk because Carl Sagan, he apparently was the inspiration for the film Contact. I saw that when it came out back in the 90s or whatever, and I didn't think it was that good, but maybe I should revisit it. But it's this idea of how would the communication work with the aliens? And lots of people were very interested in this because we don't know how that would work, right? We saw this with the film Arrival. And then they ask the questions of, like, you know, does language shape our reality? They ask. And they kind of leave it there. But in my mind, when they talk about this, they could have went way further with it. there's something to this idea that our thoughts do shape reality. In terms of the occultism, there's this esoteric doctrine and, you know, creating reality from the mind, which is what magic is all about. That's what Harry Potter is going to do someday. In terms of the Kabbalah, they believe that the Tree of Life represents God's emanations of the mind through what they call Sephiroth, and it created reality. And even in a non-occult pattern, if you look at the Bible, it says that he spoke the word and the world came into existence. He meaning God. So there is something to this idea of language shaping reality. So there they kind of hinted around to it, but they didn't break it down real far. Then they go into depictions of aliens, which I found very interesting. Because they brought up H.R. Giger, who, again, I've got a whole analysis and video about him. He was in touch with the dark side, his own, you know, sort of admission. But they brought up the idea of the psychosexual imagery of the alien xenomorph that he created for the, you know, popular Alien films. It's this sort of phallic head, and there's all these sexual undertones. There's these ideas of rape when they, the face hugger sort of like forces itself into the mouth. What's the actress's name from Alien? Sigourney Weaver. She's on there and she talks about how humanity, like we think of humanity through genders, and the xenomorphs are a blend of both genders and thus unidentifiable. And we talked about this with Janelle Monáe with the pansexual thing and the genderless android. And this will come up again because I've got a grand finale of a very intriguing theory, or, you know, self-proclaimed intriguing theory. I haven't heard anyone else talking about this theory that I've got. It might exist out there already. I haven't even Googled it. I literally just kind of jotted it down for this show. Teaser, teaser, teaser. It's coming up at the end. Then Will Smith is on this show. I think he's a stooge. I just don't trust this guy. He talks about alien entertainment is meant for people to get together and evolve. Those are the words he uses. He says to evolve us. And when they do that, that's when they know they've done their job. And then the example they give is District 9. And this is this film about a dude who starts becoming an alien, and then he becomes alienated and has to live in these sort of alien-controlled villages. And they're basically saying that everything is analogous for, you know, what we do to the aliens is what we do to one another. I don't disagree with that entirely, but anyways, that was the sum up of the first episode. If there's more interesting concepts to pull out from the future episodes, I'll let you know. But that was the one about aliens, which I had particular interest in. Now, oh, I forgot to give you another little brief update. There was a show about Jack Parsons that Ridley Scott was working on about a year or two ago, and then it seemed like it kind of fell through. It was based upon the book Strange Angel, which is all about Jack Parsons and his life as an occultist and his work for NASA. But apparently it went through, and it's going to come out here soon. It is set to premiere on June 14th, 2018, on CBS All Access. I don't know if that means it's just going to be online. You know, at the moment, there's not a lot about it. They implied that it was going to be on TV. Perhaps not. But it's, you know, very specifically about how he was a disciple of Aleister Crowley, and he used Crowley's teachings of self-actualization to support his endeavor to the stars, which again was, you know, that was the conclusion I came up with for my book, The Dark Path. You know, previous to writing The Dark Path, I actually sent a survey out to my email newsletter list, said, hey, what topics would you want me to cover in the next book? And it was kind of a split down the middle of break down the whole overall agenda and entertainment, as well as break down the alien agenda. So I did kind of both. And in it, I found so much stuff supporting this idea that the occultists are tied in with the NASA program. You know, Wernher von Braun, Jack Parsons, they all have occult histories, and they all were pursuing this desire of Konstantin Tsiolkovsky. He was like the original ancient alien theorist guy. They believed in panspermia and aliens creating our world and evolving us and all this wacky stuff. So, you know, the modern day NASA folks and scientists, I don't know if they understand their connection to the occult, but science is very directly related to it. Which brings us up to my last topic. Ancient Aliens. Season 13, Episode 1 aired. And on it, there was a lot to talk about. John Podesta was on there. Mr. Pizzagate himself. Don't know who that is? Get a pizza map and I'll show you. Another guy named Elizondo who was supposedly... So it's about this New York Times article revealing this black budget program that the Pentagon was supposedly doing. It was called the Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program, ATIP. ATIP indeed, right? Just the tip, just to see if it fits. See if it fits into the public's consciousness, we'll say. But it was a secret program supposed to investigate all this aerial phenomenon, blah, blah, blah. And they called ATIP, okay? Now, John Podesta, why is he involved on this? Why is he on Ancient Aliens? If you don't know who he is, there's all this Pizzagate stuff. You can go down that rabbit hole somewhere else. Basically, he was part of this email chain talking about 30,000 hot dogs in a hot tub or whatever. Now, he claimed, and I wrote about this before the election, he was claiming that Hillary Clinton was going to expose the truth about UFOs through a big disclosure effort, okay? That was part of the big push Clinton was claiming when she was running. Podesta was also, according to the WikiLeaks emails, alleged to be talking to Edgar Mitchell. He was an astronaut who's also actually featured on this episode of Ancient Aliens. They post-dated it. It was like from an interview 6 years ago or something. But Edgar Mitchell, he was another covert New Ager. He actually started this Institute of Noetic Sciences. And he was a big subscriber of this global consciousness idea. Again, take us back to Konstantin Tsiolkovsky. And he believed that aliens wanted us to be involved with this progression and evolution, evolving mankind into this global consciousness, one being, again, lack of diversity kind of ideas, maybe. And that could be an argument for why they're stripping away genders and sexual identities and diversity and all that. Maybe they want us to homogenize and be, I don't know, shoved into this one consciousness nonsense. But he admits, Edgar Mitchell actually admits that he's never seen the aliens, but he sure was obsessed with them. I think he said he was like influenced by it when he was out there, like he had a emotional experience or whatever, which I'm sure that happened, whatever. Now, going to revisit that idea of breaking down the diversity and homogenizing us, that is the ideas that have been presented by occultists in the past. Helena Blavatsky, a.k.a. Cassandra the Blatsky, just kidding. See my Harry Potter reference half hour ago. She said, and I quote, in the book Problems of Humanity, she wrote, when all religions will be regarded as emanating from one great spiritual source, all will be seen as unitedly providing the one root out of which the universal world religion will inevitably emerge. Again, like this is all planned out. This is what they want. I mean, she said that freaking 120 years ago or something like that. All right, that was the free content. Again, if you want the bonus content, Tom DeLong, Disinformation Project, Information, Operation Mockingbird, Bigelow, that great David Childress impression that I do, a little bit on Project Signs, Clinton and the Rockefeller family's initiative to push UFO disclosure, and how Hillary Clinton was actually supposed to be revealing the truth to the masses if she would have got voted in, apparently. Talk a little bit about that. And also, my most controversial hypotheses that I've ever floated. I'll give you a hint. It's related to aliens and sex magical energy. Yes, very controversial indeed. You can get that on patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Subscribe at the IW supporter level or above. You'll also get a free copy of my book, The Dark Path, my latest book. If you've already got a copy of that, thanks for the reviews. If you haven't dropped a review on Amazon yet, what are you waiting for? Let's do this. Thanks for the review on iTunes. If you haven't left a review on iTunes, drop one. Also, thanks for listening. Talk to you guys next week.